Hello and welcome to a very special edition of the Bristol to Beijing podcast. After perhaps almost 2 years, we are back for a special episode with me, Luke Grenfell Shaw. I am talking to you from Bishkek, of all places. It is a sunny midday. It is 12:47, and I am sitting in the Sierra coffee shop, which is right next to the Russian embassy. And it's the 17th of March, which is the final day of the Russian elections. And at midday, or Alexei Navalny, before he was killed, or his sort of part of his final statement, said that he wanted people to protest or mark midday on the final day of the elections, the 17th of March. And so where I am sitting right now, I can see a pretty much endless stream of Russians queuing up to go into the embassy. Now, whether that's to vote for Putin or to spoil their ballots or to submit a blank ballot, I don't know. I expect there's a mix. I think some people probably are here to vote for Putin, and I expect a lot of the younger people are not going to be doing so, or to be voting for the candidate furthest away from Putin. Though that said, the only candidates who are allowed to stand are essentially puppets, pro-war puppets of Putin. So choice is limited. Now, you might have been wondering what the initial music was at the start of this episode. And it is, of course, not the usual music that has started the Bristol to Beijing podcast back in its glory days, a little bit over 2 years ago. But I chose this music because I felt it represented the last 4 months best of all. Now, it's called Siedovaya Noch, means grey nights, and it's by Laskovaya May, which is a Russian, very famous Russian music group from the 80s. And to me, it represents my time in Almaty because it was the soundtrack to the series Slovo Patsana, which is something that I watched in its entirety with Mitya. Now, who is Mitya? I'll be telling you in a second. How did I end up in Almaty? Well, I will also be telling you that. But it does feel somewhat ironic that I am recording this in Bishkek and not Almaty. But it also seems fitting to have come a full circle, because back on the 28th of November, I think it was, I flew to Bishkek expecting to base myself here or in the mountain town of Karakol on the lakes of Issyk-Kul. But instead, I spent the next 4 months primarily in Almaty. And yet I have come back here to Bishkek to see friends and round out my time in Central Asia, at least for now. So how and why did I decide to come to Central Asia? Well, yesterday I came across an entry in my diary from the 24th of November, and I thought it was very interesting because I was writing how I wasn't that happy in the UK, how I wanted to be somewhere else, and I was writing different locations. I was thinking perhaps Girona or Chamonix or Andorra, or indeed Kyrgyzstan, perhaps Karakol or Bishkek. I knew I wanted a change from the UK. I also wanted to be in the mountains and hopefully with a community of runners and outdoor enthusiasts. And I also had this idea in the back of my mind that I wanted to get my Russian fluent. It had been an idea of mine that before I turned 30, I would be able to speak fluent Russian. Now, on the 24th of November, I was actually up in the north of England, near Penrith, and At this point, I still hadn't decided what I was going to do, but less than a week later, I was already in Bishkek, which is quite a common occurrence to me. I tend to make decisions fairly quickly, not altogether impulsively. Usually there's quite a lot of background thought, but it's sort of a little bit like a earthquake or a tidal wave, that the tremors have been brewing for a while, or the background pressure has been building, and then all of a sudden I realize I've had enough, I'm going to make my decision. And I decided I would fly out to Bishkek. I have some very good friends in Bishkek. I worked out in the University of Central Asia in the small town of Narin. And of course, in Kyrgyzstan, people speak Russian, so I thought this would be the perfect place to spend my winter, particularly as Karakol is at 1,700 meters, so it's already at good altitude. So I arrived in Bishkek without really having a clear idea of what I would do. However, I had been messaging and had a couple of calls with someone called Dasha. She'd been following me on Instagram for a little while, and we'd finally exchanged a couple of messages. That is, I had finally replied to Dasha's messages, which is a bit of a problem for me, replying to people. And it transpired that Dasha and I had been on the same Russian exchange program between my school and hers 11 years ago. And Dasha was one of the best friends of my exchange partner. And I realized that it would be quite a cool opportunity to see Dasha, but she wasn't in Bishkek, she was in Almaty. So I thought, well, I don't have any plans particularly right now in Bishkek. Dasha is soon going to be going off to Armenia to work as a ski instructor. So I could spend 2 or 3 days in Almaty seeing Dasha, and then I will come back to Bishkek and start my time most likely in Karakol. So I got on a shared taxi from the Kyrgyz-Kazakh border, took the 3-hour drive into Almaty. And when I got to Dasha's flat, it was about 10 o'clock at night. I eventually found it without any phone signal, dialed the number. When I walked into the flat, I was confronted by a burst of light and friends and cats. Perhaps it was the cats that struck me most of all. As I opened the door, 2 cats tried to bolt out of it, immediately to be restrained by Dasha. And really, these 2 cats became some of the stars of my time in Almaty. I remember that first night being quite tired and hungry, and Dasha kindly making a bowl of pelmeni dumplings for me. Their flat was a small one. It was just a studio apartment with a fold-out sofa bed. And I hadn't, I think, fully realized. I think I had realized, Dasha had said, but Dasha had a husband, Mitya, and they lived together. They'd come from St. Petersburg in Russia, and they were now living their lives in Almaty. And I remember on that first night sort of looking around the flat and sort of thinking, is there another room here? Because there doesn't seem to be that much space. And I wasn't quite sure where I was going to be sleeping. So I very tentatively asked Dasha, what are the sleeping arrangements? Being very British, I think I tried to phrase it as diplomatically as possible. And Dasha said, well, you know, this is the flat. It's one room, but we've got an airbed for you. And I slept very well on that airbed when we finally got to sleep that night after a lot of talking and chatting. Now, the few days that Dasha was in Almaty, we ran up the Essentai River. We did some skiing and ski touring up in the mountain ski resort of Shymbulak. And we also climbed one of the peaks, Kumbel, which was 3,200 meters. Dasha kept on insisting I wasn't wearing enough clothes, and I kept on ignoring her, thinking that I didn't need advice from anyone. I had done plenty of running and outdooring in my time, and I knew that if I ran fast enough, I didn't really need that many clothes. But on that Sunday that Mitya, Dasha and I climbed Kumbel, I realized that I hadn't really prepared for the literally freezing temperatures at the top at 3,200 meters. They weren't just freezing temperatures, but it was windswept. And I was wearing my lightest pair of running shoes, my very favorite Catamount Agiles. And my feet had been numb for probably 2 hours or so, and at times sort of really quite, well, it was no longer painful because they were numb, but it was concerning. And it was only when I got back that I discovered that my big toe on my left foot had actually gone a shade of purple and over the next few days turned blistered, and I'd got sort of the first stages of frostbite, which was a bit of a wake-up call. And throughout my time in Almaty, I was aware that whilst in the UK, there's never really much of a need to wear trousers when exercising, because, you know, the coldest it's ever going to be is zero or possibly minus one. But when you're in Almaty, the coldest it could be is minus 25, and that is a totally different ball game. So I learned quickly, though not as quick as Dasha would like, the importance of wearing good warm clothing, which would have been a problem because I didn't bring any warm clothing with me, or certainly not warm enough clothing. I brought sort of light autumn wear from the UK because that's kind of what you need, so jumpers and, you know, a slightly thicker running top. However, I was saved because of the generosity of Mitya in particular, as he lent me half of his wardrobe, so his jacket, his trousers, his boots, and I ended up being clothed pretty much as Mitya, which made things even more confusing because several people noted over our time together that we looked quite similar. We both had quite similar sort of habits. We both enjoy being outdoors, running, ski touring. And it did, I think, lend to some confusion and Dasha getting a little bit mixed up of who her husband was when I was wearing all of Mitya's clothing. Now, soon, Dasha left for Armenia, and it forced me to think about what I was going to do with the rest of my time in Central Asia. And as much as I enjoyed my time with Dasha and Mitya, I was highly aware that it was a small apartment, and I had a lot of shit to do. I had my book to write, I had the film to make, I wanted to do some amazing base period training, all whilst injuring my back, which meant that I couldn't really run. And I kind of expected that pretty soon I would head back to Bishkek. But what I discovered is I was actually really rather not just enjoying my time in Almaty, but really beginning to feel like I was thriving there and having a base. I discovered that I really enjoyed living with Mitya. We only spoke Russian together. We had the two cats to contend with. One cat, Spartak, who was the old timer, and Dasha and Mitya had him for 7 years, I think, was the sweetest, loveliest, most affectionate cat you can imagine. The other one, Yelsia, had only been taken off the streets by Dasha in a moment of pity about a month before. And to be honest, Yelsia was a menace. I mean, the Russian word for this would be like hooligan, hooliganka, like a hooligan. Yelsia was, frankly, untamable. And at the middle of the night, she would basically go berserk, running across the room, running back again, making a terrible amount of noise. And I was thinking, there is no way I can stay here with this cat, which is making the nights a menace. It's a living, waking nightmare having a cat jump on top of your face in the middle of the night. And I wasn't sure how Mitya would feel about this, because it was very clear that Mitya was very affectionate. Not just for Spartak, but also for Yelsia. In fact, levels of love for a cat that I have rarely, if ever, seen. And whilst I am a cat lover myself, my own sympathy and patience does not run nearly as deep as Mitya's. However, Mitya didn't stop me when I shut Yelsia in the bathroom and I had a much better night's sleep. So this repeated itself for a month until Yelsia started being significantly better behaved, probably not through my own training, but through his, through Mitya's continued displays of love and affection for Yelsia the cat. But there was something else that I was worried about. Aside from the fact it was a small space, I knew that for me to hit my stride and feel comfortable, I would need to rebuild my routine. And my routine in my life, when I'm happy and effective, starts at 6:30 in the morning, every morning, even on weekends. I'm not saying it's the right way of doing things, but it's the way that means that I can get up with energy and motivation for the day ahead. Now, I was quite concerned that this routine would be a very antisocial thing to inflict upon anyone, not least Mitya, who had kindly let me stay in his room, in his single room of his apartment. I was very cautious and very doubtful that anyone would be wanted to be raised at 6:30 a.m. every single morning. And so much so that I didn't even ask Mitya. I just thought, this isn't going to work. I should find somewhere where I can rise at 6:30, make my cup of coffee, and start writing my book. But then I started looking at the practicalities of renting a place and how that was going to be quite awkward and quite expensive. And I thought, well, maybe it is just worth asking Mitya to see what he thinks, because other things being equal, I'm quite enjoying my life here. I enjoy hanging out with the cats. It's nice to speak Russian with someone every single day. So I asked Mitya and I said, look, I really want to get up at 6:30 every morning. This is how I work. I'm a bit weird. Dasha had taught me this word in Russian, dushnila, which is kind of like someone who has OCD or has their very sort of specific habits. Everything needs to be kind of quite precise and sort of attention to detail. I'm not really a dushnila. I think I'm a little bit sort of more go with the wind and go with the flow, but in certain ways I do need my dushinila side, and particularly if my day doesn't start at 6:30, if I don't go for a run, if I don't feel like I've got the shit done that I need to get done, I'm not a happy person. So I asked Mitya, do you think, what, you know, like I tend to get up at 6:30 every morning, I don't think that's probably going to be something you particularly enjoy. So, but it's, you know, I thought I'd just mention it before I go and live somewhere else. And to my surprise, Mitya said, oh, well, no, that actually suits me really well, because I don't tend to have the motivation to get up myself, but having someone else around to help me get up and start my day would work really well for me. I almost couldn't believe it. I thought, he's just being polite. But of course, I realized that Russians aren't actually polite. You know, they only say what they think. And so I realized that, no, Mitya really does mean this. And so that is how I ended up not simply spending a few nights in Almaty, but making myself a permanent resident on the airbed in the corner of Mitya and Dasha's room for over 3 months. It was the most unlikely of living arrangements, but perhaps some of the most harmonious I've experienced in my life. It involved, well, getting up at 6:30, mutually showing love and affection for the cats, though I could never compete really with Mitya. I was always amazed at his indulgence of Yeltsia's behaviors, particularly when Yeltsia started chewing through pairs and pairs of laces. I have to say, at times I was slightly annoyed, and Mitya, like a grandfather, just indulgently laughed at the silly behavior of naughty Yeltsia. And I was like, these are my shoes and I can't use them anymore. It was a little bit of a struggle to see the funny side of the situation, but I learned to keep the shoes out of reach of Yeltsia's mouth. And it was wonderful in the evenings, coming back from work, as I will loosely call it, to see Mitya. We would often cook together, or one of us would cook, the other of us would make a salad, and of course watch Slovo Patsana, which is a hit Russian serial, Russian TV series, that shows the very gritty and rough life in Kazan in the 1980s. So it's a town, city, a major city of Russia. And I think without watching it with Mitya, it would not have been nearly so fun. And in particular, we enjoyed the ad breaks, which was sponsored by a kind of Bitcoin company, which was all about sort of save your bits, which sort of sounds a bit funny in the UK, or in English, that is. Looking after your bits. So we had much amusement in the evening, and I learned the difference between a patsana and a chushparen, between like a nice guy bracket sucker and a hardcore guy who's a bit more streetwise. So there was a lot of good fun to be had there. We also enjoyed stretching, generally walking around in our boxers, using massage guns and whatnot, and both enjoying the life of essentially two bachelors, though of course Mitya often was calling Dasha in Armenia. So I now want to consider a little bit more of what was Almaty like. And also, given I'm now in Bishkek, it's been kind of quite striking to think, well, what is Bishkek like? And Kyrgyzstan, and I've come back to Kyrgyzstan, and it's reminded me that Kyrgyzstan tends to be a little bit more hip, a little bit more rebellious. The taxi drivers kind of hustle a bit more. The music you're more likely to hear in Kyrgyzstan on the radio is kind of more like rap or hip hop, whereas it tends to be a bit more sort of traditional and laid back in Kazakhstan. But let's think about Almaty. Almaty is, of course, you know, a pretty large city. I think about 2 million people, and the one of the former intellectual hubs of the Soviet Union. And during the Second World War, a lot of the intellectuals from Moscow were shipped off to do their thinking in Almaty instead, away from the front lines. And it's retained a lot of that culture. In terms of there's a lot of theatres, there's concert hall, there's a good stand-up comedy scene, and that makes it quite a dynamic city to be a part of. Buildings-wise, there's an interesting mix of Soviet-era grey concrete, occasionally progressive concrete apartment blocks, and somewhat garish glass-fronted buildings. In particular, there's several towers right in the south of Almaty, at sort of which is higher than the north bit near the mountains, that looks somewhere between a fortress and a business center and a mistake. They are just purely reflective, shiny, a huge kind of conglomerate of a building with several big pointy towers. I have always wondered what the point of it was, because it just looks, it's striking, but it's garish, in my opinion. As a cyclist, I did a lot of cycling in Almaty, particularly up to Medeo, which is where the gondola is to the ski resort of Shymbulak, and also the world's highest natural ice rink, which is called Madeo. And I would very often cycle there as part of my training, which gave me a lot of experience on Kazakh roads. To start with the good, I think it's amazing how after a very heavy snowfall, within a few hours, the roads are almost clear again of snow, that they put probably some horrendous concoction of chemicals to melt the snow, and they are safe for riding on. That said, the roads that haven't been cleared are then lethal ice rinks. What makes them particularly lethal is you don't know that you're about to enter an ice rink, and you don't quite know which roads have been cleared thoroughly or not. But in particular, I would say that what struck me about the car driving attitudes, which didn't in the same way when I was in Kazakhstan 2.5 years ago, is that the cars really don't give a damn about cyclists. And the number of times I had a car pass me with like an inch or 2 inches, when there was plenty of space for them to pass with significantly more room, it made me exasperated, scared, and a little bit angry. I was very grateful every single time I got back home without having been knocked off my bike. And touch wood, you know, during my entire time in Almaty, I didn't actually get hit. But it really was quite an unpleasant experience. But to think about what was really quite fun, and you know what, amazing about Almaty, and you know, really this podcast, I want to sort of celebrate Almaty as a city, whilst also, you know, not being a sycophant about it, but I do think it is an incredible place, and particularly to spend winter, and particularly when you're used to British Bristol winters, which, to sum them up, tend to be dark, grey, wet, and fairly cold. Not necessarily freezing, but because it tends to be raining or have relatively high levels of moisture in the air, vlažnost, they tend to feel a lot colder anyway. And you rarely see the sun, and if there is sun, it sets anyway at about 4 p.m. So, like, who cares if there was sun in the first place? It was barely there for any time. I fell in love with the weather here in Almaty in winter, because you kind of have two choices on the whole. It's either snow or it's sun. Now, I don't think I'm being too controversial in saying that snow is a hell of a lot better than rain. It looks nicer. It isn't as wet. It allows you to ski. It's very beautiful to run through. And it's not as depressing. And I think I'm also not alone in thinking that sun is a quite a favorable attribute of the meteorology. And where I am right now in Bishkek, I am sitting out in the street in the sunlight in a t-shirt, feeling very pleased with myself. So the weather was definitely something that made Almaty superior to the UK, especially during winter time. Now, of course, one other thing that makes Almaty a very remarkable city is that half an hour away from the city is the Shimbulak ski resort. I mean, to be fair, I think it probably takes an hour all told to get from the ski resort, from the city to the ski resort. But I think it's remarkable that it's that close. And in fact, it was so close that I managed to turn it into part of my training routine. I already told you about how I cycled to Madeo, but once my back injury had cleared up, I started running to the Shimbulak ski resort, which was about 20 kilometers, all uphill. And over the 20 kilometers, I'd do about 1500 meters of climbing, and it would take me usually just over 2 hours to get there. Which, I'm a firm believer that if you want to make exercise something you do every day, it needs to become a habit, it needs to be built into your routine. And one of the best ways of building into your routine is to build it into your commute. And so my commute, I made it to the Shimbulak ski resort, and I'd probably do this three times a week, maybe four times a week. And that was an amazing way of building mileage, building strength in my legs, and also getting the separation between home and office. Which brings me to my next point, which is how all the rumors that I was a spy were true. You see, a lot of people naturally thought that this guy who looks a bit Russian, he speaks Russian, he's come out here, he says he's from the UK. Well, you know what? He's clearly a spy. Now, everyone knows that a good spy needs a good alias. They need another name. And it was at the MasterCard lounge in Shymbolak that I developed my alter ego. So, a word of explanation is required here. The Shymbolak MasterCard lounge is a wonderful place with showers, chairs, tables, a changing room, a place to store your kit, and most importantly of all, a coffee and hot chocolate machine, all of which you can use for free if you have one of these black MasterCards, which of course I do not have. The Monzo MasterCard is very much orange, and I'm too much of a cheapskate to actually, and just don't earn enough money to have one of these elite cards in the UK. However, because things are very different in Kyrgyzstan, in even Kazakhstan, both Mitya and Dasha had a MasterCard, a black MasterCard that allowed them to use this lounge. And I wanted to go to the lounge very regularly to write my book and, well, ski, I suppose. And because I didn't have a real job, it meant I was often going there more often than Mitya would. And Mitya does this amazing work of sort of using, I guess, like alpinism, you would call it, of, you know, using ropes and pulleys and carabiners in order to do lots of things like cleaning windows, changing light bulbs, changing signs, usually in very high places. Pretty physically intense work. And yeah, Mitya seemed to do a very good job of it. And I was basically just bumming around saying I was writing my book for a few months. And for that, I needed lots of coffee and lots of hot chocolate. And so the MasterCard lounge was perfect. Now, in the MasterCard lounge, yes, you need one of these black cards. And so Mitya lent me his card so I could use it without him. Now, the first time I did it, I had no idea if they were checking the name of the card or whatever. So I said my name was Mitya also, in case that they looked at the card and they sort of said, the card says Dmitry, which, you know, Mitya is short for that in Russian. Why have you said your name is Luke? The two obviously don't match. So I said Mitya, they believed me, and so I became Mitya in the lounge, which was generally fine. I remembered that I was called Mitya, I said I was Mitya, at least to the staff there. But what became more difficult is when other people started saying hi, introducing themselves, and say, oh, you know, where are you from, what's your name? And I would say, oh, I'm from the UK, and my name's Luke. And I go, no, my name's Luke and Mitya. And they'd look a bit confused, and I'd say, well, you know, like, Mitya is my Russian name, and Luke is my English name. Which perhaps wasn't the best deception I've ever done in my life, and perhaps a reason why MI5 or MI6 are never going to be calling me up to recruit me. But it was an important part of my alter ego as Mitya, the Anglicanin, the Englishman who was here in Kazakhstan, who might or might not have had long-lost parents and relatives from Russia and was trying to rediscover his roots. So, I think one other thing I want to mention about Almaty, aside from the coffee and hot chocolate machine, was just simply the coffee culture was something that made me very, very happy. It was a bit of a personal mission to find the best coffee places in Almaty. My top recommendations, for what it's worth, for those of you punters who are thinking of making a trip to Almaty, especially for the coffee, is Julius, which is pretty central, and Master Coffee, which is also pretty central and has a nice logo of a turtle, which I particularly enjoyed. So one of the highlights of Almaty as well was the outdoor community. There is a real outdoor community. It's small, but it is growing, and there's an amazing series of races put on by Extremnalaya Athletica, Extreme Athletics. And I've never managed to say that word properly, and it still annoys me. And there were different races, some pretty iconic ones, like the Amangeldi race that goes up to 3,900 meters in January, which is pretty hardcore. Then there are some other more fun ones that go along old kind of hiking paths, like the Japanese Road, which was made by Japanese workers in the 1950s as they were prisoners of war from the Second World War, and they were making a hydropower dam and they needed to build a route through the mountains. So there was another run at night that went through there called the Tun Run. But I want to think about or focus on the last race of the year that I did in Almaty, which was called the Alpine Cup. It was almost a vertical kilometer from the ski resort of Shumbulak to the very top, the Tolgarski Pass. Now, I was feeling pretty good coming into this race. I'd just come back from training camp in France, and naturally I wanted to win. That's my default position when it comes to races. And I was in the MasterCard lounge locker room getting my stuff ready, and I'd got out a pair of sort of spikes. They're called koshki, like cats in Russian, and they're the sort of the chains that you put on the bottom of your shoes in order to grip the snow really well. And as I was getting them out, a guy came up next to me and was like, I don't think you really need them. The snow's really quite firm. It's tvordy sneg. It's like hard snow. You know, you're just going to have extra weight with those spikes. And for some reason, I sort of think, yeah, this guy's got a really good point. I don't need these. So I took them off again, and I thought, you know, these light running shoes are going to be enough. They've got good grip. It's hard snow. It's all going to be fine. Naturally, this was not the case. As soon as I started running the race, I realized that I was slipping quite a lot in the snow. And what I thought would be a fairly straightforward victory turned out not to be the case, because there was another runner who I discovered afterwards had come from Turkey, though he was actually from Russia, who turned out to be a very powerful, strong athlete, and one I know who was wearing sort of snow spikes on his shoes. Not saying that's why he was going faster, but I think it helped. And I went pretty hard off the start, thinking I'm going to shake this guy soon enough, he's going to drop off. And to my consternation, he never did. Then after about 20 minutes of running, he made a push, and I was slipping and sliding around in the snow, realizing that I was going into the red and I couldn't keep with him. And this guy Bogdan went on to take a very well-deserved victory. He was very strong all the way through. And yeah, there was nothing about chance of his victory. That was a good, powerful display. However, for me, it was definitely a learning point about the equipment makes a really big difference. And it's something I learned time and again during my stay in Almaty, particularly in the races, that, yeah, wearing clothing that's warm enough, wearing shoes that have got enough grip, makes a huge difference to the result of the race. I think one other thing that Almaty really taught me was how to run downhill. It's the reason why I got injured in the first place, that I put too much pressure on my spine and as I was leaning backwards as I went downhill. And it took a explanation from Dasha plus some sort of a few tutorials to understand that the feeling one should have when running downhill is not to be leaning back to try and break yourself, but almost to be leading from your chest, tumbling downhill, letting your legs catch themselves or catch your body to stop yourself falling over. It takes quite a bit of courage to begin with, but the best way I found of starting is to let your body to stand still on when you're on a slope, and to let your body start tipping forwards. And as will naturally happen, when you're at that angle, when you start tipping forwards, you need to take a step. That's how you go down the hill, and you want to keep that angle of your body weight, that angle of your body all the way downhill. And I'm hoping it will pay big dividends this season of racing. So now we are drawing to the end of this time on this podcast episode. Of course, my time in Almaty is never going to be possible to summarize in just a mere sort of half an hour or 40 minutes. But I think it has been a very special time. And I look back to my diary entry on the 24th of November 2023. And what I was writing there was, I want to have a chance to improve my Russian. I want mountains. And I sort of want a base. I want a home. And to my surprise, I didn't find that in Bishkek or Karakol, but I found it in Almaty. And that was something very special and precious to me. And it was certainly down to Mitya and Dasha for welcoming me into their home and giving me that base and that home, really. A place that I could call mine, that had cats in it, where I could lounge on a yoga mat in my boxers. That was immensely special. But it was also more than that, because in a short period of time, I found that I had a community of friends, whether that was runners, whether that was friends from the Bristol to Beijing ride I made before, like Marjan and Janara, whether that was making new friends like Nikita, who Akbar introduced me to. Akbar, I also met on the ride 2.5 years ago, and he is now becoming one of Kazakhstan's foremost influencers, along with Nikita, their own YouTube channel, Dreamers, which is inspired by Yes Theory. Two really wonderful, dynamic, kind Kazakh guys who made a huge difference to my time in Almaty as well. And then there were also some people that I met through the mountain community, met at different events, met on Tinder as well. That was all part of the journey. And so when it came to my 30th birthday, I was really touched and delighted to have a group of 10 friends with whom I could celebrate with. And at this point, I look back on my aim that I had. I've had it for probably 11 or 12 years, to speak fluent Russian, to speak fluent Russian before I'm 30. And I think, have I achieved this? And I think, honestly, the answer is no. That's the spoiler. I don't honestly think I can speak fluent Russian. I think I can speak pretty good Russian. I can speak very understandable Russian. I can have a conversation for 2-3 hours with friends entirely in Russian. But I still feel that I face big limitations in how I can express myself. It doesn't take much. If someone just starts speaking very quickly, I lose a lot of understanding. I still really struggle with books and with films. And also, as soon as I open my mouth and start speaking, it's pretty obvious that I'm not Russian or Kazakh or a native Russian speaker. And of course, that is the sort of thing that takes perhaps a decade to get good at, though I have been, in theory, working my Russian for the last sort of 14, 15 years, though not necessarily that effectively. But I think above all, I'm just very, very pleased I did come out to Central Asia to spend these past 4 months here, because it has been an amazing immersive experience, particularly with Mitya. But I've had no expat friends at all. All my friends have been Russian or Kazakh. And I've discovered just how much progress I can make by fully immersing myself. And also that I can do this in a way that is fun, and that I'm not desperate to leave and get back to the UK. On the contrary, I am. I was missing Almaty even before I left, and I'm not exactly thrilled to be coming back to the UK. It'll be fun, there'll be good bits of it, but it's hardly something I feel like, I'm desperate to get back. So I think it's been a good time of reflection these past few days, to think, well, I've made a lot of progress with Russian. Have I achieved that dream? Not exactly. But was it the right decision to come out to Almaty? Well, it was a really good decision. I'm not sure there are right and wrong decisions in life, but it was certainly one that I'm very happy with the course it has taken me on. So I think that is about it for this episode, this very special episode of the Bristol to Beijing podcast. Now, of course, I want to say one final thing, which is a very happy birthday to Dasha. It is her birthday today, or I hope it will be when she listens to this. And so just wishing Dasha a very, very happy birthday. If you enjoyed this episode of the Bristol to Beijing podcast and you want more, then let me know. But in particular, don't just let me know you want more, but let me know what you want to hear more about. Because frankly, it's a bit difficult for me to work out what's interesting in my life, particularly now that I'm not cycling around the world. In fact, I feel I'm doing some very boring things of doing lots of training, writing a book, and making a film. And I've said for probably 2 years now, these are the activities I'm doing, and they tend to be the same week in, week out. So if there's anything you particularly want me to talk about, then do let me know, and I would be very interested to hear it. But from the streets of Bishkek, outside the Russian embassy, and thinking of Alexei Navalny, it's me, Luke Grenfell-Shaw. Thank you so much for listening. And goodbye.